Chapter 6. Assessing Honesty and Integrity. Whenever you're speaking to a person with questionable motives, you should ask yourself, is this someone who is likely to open up to me and be willing to have an honest conversation, or does he have a trick or two up his sleeve? To find out, we'll begin with a look at game theory and the ultimatum game, created by the Israeli economist Ariel Rubinstein. Rubinstein offered random strangers the opportunity to participate in a game in which two people interacted only once and completely anonymously. Each pair was given $100, but the twist was that one person of the pair was arbitrarily chosen to divide the money any way they chose. The receiving partner could either accept or reject the offer. If the offer was accepted, they would divide the money accordingly, and if rejected, both would leave empty-handed. Rubinstein accurately predicted that the person who got to decide how to distribute the money in such a game would more often than not offer the other person less than they would keep themselves. The split was rarely generous. No real surprise here. What is intriguing is that subsequent studies revealed how to predict the likelihood that the receiver would accept the offer, or, in a word, cooperate, by the observation of a single behavior. Researchers videotaped the receiver's facial expressions as they faced unfair offers, and analysis found that cooperators, those who accepted the offer, displayed more emotional expression when responding to unfair offers. In other words, if they didn't like the offer, they wouldn't mask their dissatisfaction with a poker face or put on a happy face. They showed their dissatisfaction even when they ultimately accepted the offer. The study concluded that emotional expressiveness is a strong indication of both cooperation and trustworthiness. This study led me and my team to field test a hypothesis about another way to gauge whether a person is likely to be cooperative. Here's what we found with uncanny accuracy. When a person narrates her present behavior, it is a strong indication that she wants to have an open discussion. For example, a coworker comes into your office and, as she gets herself comfortable, voices aloud, "Let me just get myself situated." "Okay, let me sit down." Or, "I'm just going to open up this drink." Although it is patently obvious what she is doing, the narration indicates a desire for transparency and connection, which is consistent with a cooperative rather than confrontational disposition. Similarly, take note how a parent, teacher, or babysitter engages a small child in play. Narration is usually present because the adult seeks a connection with the child. "Let's open up the box. Oh, what do we have here? It squeaks when I push on its belly." Intuitively, we pick up that the adult is trying to bond with the child. Imagine watching a scene whereby the adult silently takes out the toys and sets everything up without speaking aloud. Unless the adult is trying to build suspense to surprise the child, it strikes us as a little cold, distant. Because self-narration requires us to feel comfortable in our surroundings, there are times when it would seem out of place and thus suspicious. You don't have to be in law enforcement to recognize just how odd it would be for a suspect, no matter how innocent, to engage in self-narration upon walking into the police station. "Okay, detective, let me just take off my jacket and get settled in." Although we expect the innocent person to become more open in conversation, he is, justifiably, guarded at the point of initial contact. Nonverbal cluster bombs. You can readily see how comfortable someone is with a particular topic by paying attention to how she navigates the physical space between the two of you. We naturally sit closer or lean toward whomever we want to connect with. If someone feels uncomfortable or is uninterested, however, She might angle her body toward the exit or actually move in that direction. While standing, she may position her back to the wall. Note whether she uses inanimate objects, for example, a cushion, a vase, anything, to form a barrier between you and her. Placing such a barrier is the verbal equivalent of, "I don't want to talk about it." Since she can't get up and leave, her displeasure manifests itself in the formation of physical barriers between her and the source of the discomfort. In much the same way that we physically hide our eyes and emotionally conceal our eyes when we lie, we also tend to adopt a more defensive and non-expressive posture. The red meat of typical body language clues informs us that open postures and gestures indicate confidence. When people sit with their legs and arms close to their body, they may be echoing the thought, "I'm keeping something in." When we feel comfortable and confident, we tend to stretch out, to claim our space, as it were. When we feel less secure, we fold our arms and legs into our body, occupying less physical space. Introducing a stressor. All of the previous is true, but body language is also too easy to fake and altogether impractical to gauge when you're not face-to-face. In order to upgrade your read, you'll need to turn up the heat slightly by introducing an emotional stressor. The objective here is to ask a question or make a statement that does not accuse the person of anything, but alludes to the possible behavior. If he doesn't realize you're implying anything, then he's probably not hiding anything. But if he gets defensive, then he knows what you're getting at, and the only way he could know is if he is guilty of the charge. Suspicion. A transportation supervisor suspects that a bus driver was drinking while on duty. Question. John, I'd like to get your advice on something. A colleague of mine at another terminal has a problem with one of her drivers. She feels he may be drinking while on duty. Do you have any suggestions on how she can approach the driver about this problem? If he's guilty, he'll become uncomfortable. If he's not drinking on the job, then he will be pleased that his advice was sought out and offer his opinion. Answers such as, "Did someone say something to you?" or "Why are you asking me about this?" indicate concern on the employee's part. This doesn't mean that he's definitely guilty, but you may want to turn up the heat even more. You do this by making an accusation, which then puts the person directly on the defensive. Responding to an accusation. As a general guideline, a truthful response is short and direct, not convoluted, long-winded, or complicated. When someone doesn't deny the allegations against him, or when he buries a no under 2 pages of musings or a 10-minute diatribe, this is a strong indication of deception. A reliable denial is direct and clear. For example, "No, I didn't do it." If, however, the denial consists of statements like, "How could you even ask me such a thing?" or "This is crazy," or "Ask anyone who knows me, I would never do that," or "How could you question my honesty?" then that raises suspicions, not so much because of the person's vociferousness, but because none of these responses consists of a direct, straightforward denial. People falsely accused, who are providing true statements, have no reason to hold back from strong, clear denials. People being deceptive, while certainly aiming to distance themselves from guilt, often have difficulty with using direct, unambiguous language in their denial. The bottom line is that if someone didn't kill his wife, then you don't want to hear that he loved his wife, and he would never do that, or that he's not a monster or a crazy person. If a teacher didn't abuse his student, you don't want to hear that he would never harm a child, or that he's not a pervert, or that everyone in the school loves him. If your employee didn't steal from your company, or your nanny didn't harm your child, you don't want to hear from her that, "Everyone loves me. My reputation is spotless. I am not a bad person. All of this may be good and true, and it's fine if such denials are included in a full response to an accusation after the direct denial. But the centerpiece of the person's response should be a consistent, clear denial of the act, and not proof that he is not the kind of person who could ever commit such an act. And while we're on the subject of denials, keep in mind that not all denials are created equal. A statement such as, "I deny these allegations," is not the same as, "I didn't do it." A denial of an allegation means that the person is refusing to acknowledge guilt, but this is not the same as denying the behavior. A reliable denial is a clear no. Only no is a no, and for that matter, only yes is a yes. Along these lines, a lack of candor is indicated when someone stalls because she needs to buy herself time to consider her options, prepare her answer, or shift the topic entirely. Therefore, she might ask you to repeat the question herself, ask you to qualify the question, qualify her own answer, or answer your question with a question. For example, when you're interviewing a potential babysitter, you might ask, "Have you ever hit a child in your care?" Here are what red flag responses sound like. 1. "That's a good question," or "I'm glad you asked that." 2. "To be perfectly honest," "to be frank," or "to tell you the truth." 3. "Well, it's not as simple as yes or no." And 4. "You know I'm against that sort of thing. I think it's morally reprehensible." Also included in this category is the ever-pervasive and always annoying response, "Why would I lie to you?" If you get this response to an accusation you've made, be suspicious. If someone's being accused of something he's done, then he probably has an excellent reason to lie. In just about any situation, if you feel that you are being lied to, it is often best not to confront the person immediately. If you're wrong, you may injure the relationship and cause the person to instantly go on the defense, making it difficult to gather more information. The energy of lies. Because telling a lie requires more mental energy than telling the truth, liars often resort to shortcuts, meaning they express themselves in a way that minimizes the need for deep thought and reflection. So be aware of the following 4 telltale signs of deceit, because if you hear or read one or more of these signs, you might have good reason to be concerned. 1. Pontificating and philosophizing. 2. Self-referral statements. 3. The complexity of simplicity. And 4. Relief after the conversation. Pontificating and philosophizing. Any statement, written or verbal, that begins to expound on a sense of fairness or justice can be problematic, unless the person is actually confessing, in which case, such declarations would be expected. Pay attention to philosophical departures, which can include anything from, "It shouldn't be this way," to, "Kids these days don't understand," to, "This is not the country I remember." The psychology behind pontificating or getting philosophical is that unconsciously the person is looking for internal justification for her behavior and validation from you, all the while seeking to present herself as a moral and just person with good, wholesome values and ideals. Self-referral statements. A self-referral statement, where the person refers back to her own words, is also a red flag. In writing, people use phrases such as I wrote above, as previously mentioned, and as explained earlier, to avoid relaying incorrect information, and because it takes more brain power to lie. It is just plain easier to refer back to what was previously said than to tell the lie again. In conversation, the same thing occurs. You may hear the overuse of such phrases as I said previously, or I answered that before. In general, a liar is more likely to repeat words and phrases in order to keep her story streamlined and to reduce the cognitive load. The complexity of simplicity. Honest statements and truthful expressions typically use a more complex sentence structure because, to be accurate, we need to make distinctions. Using words such as except, without, but, or apart from. A person who is lying has a more difficult time with these words because it is cognitively draining to keep track of what he did not do and what did not happen while relaying what he did do and what did happen. Let's take an example of a product review. The more truthful the review, the more likely it will contain longer and more complex sentences. Why? Because the reviewer is qualifying his opinion to ensure honesty, which means that the product is not the best thing since sliced bread. Rather, it is in many ways the best thing since sliced bread, except for the XYZ feature, which feels outdated. Bear in mind a critical distinction. Liars tend to use longer and more convoluted, but not complex, wording. Their sentences meander and are stuffed with insignificant details and non sequiturs, whereas truth tellers communicate with sentences that are clear and generally direct, even with a complex structure. Relief after the conversation. Because deception takes energy, watch and listen carefully during a conversation when the subject is changed. Does the person become happier? Does he seem more relaxed? He might even offer a smile or a nervous laugh. Notice his posture. Does it become more relaxed and less defensive? The giveaway here is how fast and dramatically his mood changes, indicating his discomfort with the previous subject matter. Test him to see whether he's quick to change the subject. If he has been accused of something downright awful and is innocent, he will resent the accusations and insist that the topic be explored further, either now, if possible, or in the immediate future, and he will indicate not just willingness, but a strong desire to do so. The guilty person wants the subject changed and the conversation to end. The innocent person always wants a further exchange of information. Although isolated body language signs are notoriously unreliable, particularly those that are easily controlled, an often overlooked opportunity emerges. Not in spite of the ease with which we can manage our body language, but because of it. In the next chapter, we learn how the posture and posturing of a person in both guarded and unguarded exchanges provides us with a window into his real position and plans.